You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is August the 17th, Friday, August the 17th, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I'm a little bit not on the ball there because I'm just checking on the server that we are actually live. We've had all sorts of problems this week with doing live programs, and it does look like we are connected. It does look like you can actually hear us at last, which I am really pleased about. And also I am really pleased to announce that we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II with us tonight, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing on this rainy evening? Yeah, tis a bit.
Not do any more documentaries, you won't fit them in.
It's all these accolades you've got, Dennis. This is the thing.
Well, fine. I mean, I've got to be honest, I think summer's over, but that could just be me.
Yeah, it is a bit miserable, isn't it? It's damp and it's dark already. It's dark here.
Yes, old and miserable and everything we expect it to be.
I guess, what have we got? Well, we've got a month to go, really, until the equinox. I think we will get some more sunshine just yet. I don't think it's quite over.
Forever the optimist.
I always am. Well, we've got a bit of a pessimistic show tonight, really. I mean, I'm very...
I can find them, Ghana.
I'm very pleased that I've been able to actually see the advanced screening of part 16, but it's some pretty dark stuff there. But I did find a couple of optimistic points that I think we can actually put in there with it. And I'm impressed once again, Dennis. You know, I keep being impressed with the information that you keep pulling up in this series, because most of it's been new to me. It's all stuff that I'm not aware of before. And in tonight's episode, or episode 16, when the listeners finally get to actually have a look at it, I think they're going to be surprised at this as well. You've got an informer, a Jewish informer, and he's basically explaining the Jewish goals, and it ties in with the protocols, and we'll get into what these goals are. But before we get into that, I just sort of wonder, who was this Jewish informer, and where did you find what he was saying in this?
Well, first of all, I'm not 100% sure if he was Jewish, because he's described as somebody who has a relationship with the Jews, and he refused to give his name because of the danger that he would obviously be in. So that's point one. I mean, I never did quite find out who it was. Well, this is taken from 1936. This is the same year as the Spanish Revolution. It's 3 years after Roosevelt produced the pyramid over the eye in America. So it's at a time when the Catholic Church is certainly fighting for survival and is under immense, immense pressure. But I found it, believe it or not. What I tend to do is, when I go through YouTube, I'm looking for certain things to research, I'll come across things and videos that I think I can use maybe one day, and I'll just put them in a library. And I was just going through that particular library the other week, and there it was. I can't even remember when I downloaded it. It was there, and I thought, this is appropriate to the series.
Well, wasn't it from a Jewish magazine? Because it sounds like it's a Jew writing. I mean, he's saying we need to do this, we need to do that. This is what we're going to do.
Go on. No, it's from the Catholic Gazette in London, right, of 1936. So they've been informed, and they've printed the information.
Right, because I was wondering there. I was thinking, well, you know, people could say, well, this could be the Catholics saying this because they want people to join the Catholics. But it echoes the same sort of information that's in the protocols, which came out of Russia. Now, obviously, in Russia, it was the Eastern Orthodox Church that was the enemy. It wasn't really the Catholics, and yet it's the same information here. So, you know, I would say that.
It stems from France, which obviously the Russian Revolution also does. I mean, that's where they had still do have the stronghold today, it's Masonic.
Well, it gets into some of that as well in what he's saying as well, doesn't it? He says that it's France is Freemasonic. Now that you've got a lot of text stuff there, which I've got, and then there was talking as well. And was the talking taken from the protocols and added to it, or was it, you know, or was there just the text stuff separate?
This is a reading of the Catholic podcast of the time, which goes through the details of what the informer supplied. So very very similar to the learned elders of Zion plot, and these were taken from speeches in France. So it's probably B'nai B'rith and the Grand Orient, something like that.
Right, I've got you. So this is an infiltrator that managed to get into the lodges, and this is what he heard. This is what was being said, because you know, this is the thing. This is the point that Bill Fink's been making with his series on the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. He's saying you cannot take this and separate it from what was going on at the time and say, oh, well, this is a fake, because this was going on in all the Masonic lodges. And there were a lot of books that were coming out that were written by these Freemasons, written by Jews, and they all had little bits and pieces of it that were in there. And then it was all collected together in these protocols. So this wasn't just going on in the protocols. This was going on all over the place in the lodges. This is what the goal was, this new world order that we have now. The world revolution. So what we've got here is something that adds to the protocols. This is somebody else that's infiltrated these lodges, and this is the information that he's got, and it ties in with all the rest. Well, should we start looking at some of these goals then?
That's it. Yeah.
And well, the first one we've got is must destroy the social order. They decided that in order to get the Jews rolling, to have the rule of the Jews, first of all, they must destroy the social order, and they must destroy faith, and they must destroy patriotism, the sense of patriotism. So they're basically saying we need to attack the family, we need to undermine the church, undermine Christianity, and we also need to undermine patriotism. And it's interesting that, as you say, this was in 1936, and it wasn't until cultural Marxism, really, after the war, that they really began attacking the social order and said that we have to pull apart, critical theory. We need to criticize everything there is about Western civilization and the family and pull all that apart. And also this anti-patriotism thing, again, that really came in after the war. So I'm quite surprised that, you know, that this was so far thinking ahead. There really wasn't that much information about destroying the social order at the time. And, you know, I don't think people were that anti-patriotism. I mean, even Russia was promoting patriotism, weren't they? The Great Patriotic War. So this is, you know, again, this gives it the ring of truth to it, doesn't it?
Well, there's a pattern forming in there. And what they're saying is, it's got to be fact, because I always remember in the German Revolution, when they captured some of these leaders, communist leaders, and they're all shouting before they're shot, long live the world revolution. And you look all around, and it's happening everywhere, you know, wherever they can, Mexico, you know, right through to Spain, right through to Germany, right through to France, wherever. You know, it's happening all the time, and today it's happening, as I speak, down in Syria.
Well, this bit about destroying faith as well. I mean, if you look today, I mean, even just look in the nationalist movement, and a lot of people will say, well, I don't understand the reason why people need a religion. I don't understand the reason why people need to have a faith. And then we end up with people that are leading the movement that end up, you know, being degenerate, basically, and not keeping to the standards that we would expect them to. And you can say, well, why would they keep to these standards? There's nothing to actually make them keep to these standards. But if somebody has faith and they believe in God and they're a religious man, then they are going to believe that they are going to be punished by God if they go against the truth and if they deceive people. So that's the importance of faith. You know, everything when you have government and you have people in posts in government, they all swear an oath to keep the laws of the land, and they used to swear an oath to keep the laws of the Bible. And that oath is held unto God. And if they're not God-fearing men, they're not going to care about breaking their oath. If they are God-fearing men, they're going to think, if I break my oath, I'm going to go to hell.
There's a loyalty there, yeah.
Yeah, a very important loyalty, I would suggest. If you think your eternal soul could be damned if you deceive the people and be a traitor, you're not going to do it. But if you've ceased to believe that there is anything other than what you can see in front of you and the short life that you live, there's nothing to stop you from just taking whatever you can for yourself, because you think this is all there is.
Yeah, likewise, going over a wall. You know what I mean? If you believe that, you know, the spirits of your religion, that you know your children's future in hand, and all this, it all comes together as one. And when you're told to go over a wall, you're more likely to go over that wall.
Yeah, again, that's a good point there. You know, I mean, one of the things that Julius Caesar actually said about the British people that made them so fearless in war was that they had a belief in life after death. And that was with the Druids.
Yeah.
And we see it today with the Muslims. They believe that there's life after death, and they're prepared to blow themselves up because of it.
Incredible.
Yeah, even though it's a false god, that just shows you that the power that having faith in God can have, even when it's a false god, when it's...
The power lost when you haven't. It shows it's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, this is the weakness. I think this is at the root of why the nationalist organizations fall apart, because they're not rooted in a belief in God. And the mainstream media isn't going to promote any of the ones that are rooted in a belief in God either.
No, they're not, as we found out last week's episode.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the next part in this, he's saying that it's the Catholic Church that is standing in the way of this. It's the Catholic Church that's preventing the social order being attacked. It's preventing the destruction of patriotism, and it's preventing people falling away from their faith. So that the Catholic Church is the number one enemy of the Jews, basically.
Well, can I just reiterate that? I think it's their only enemy. I can't think of another organization on any kind of scale that battled against all this. I really can't.
Well, they talk about the monarchs. I mean, later on, they say that, you know, the Pope is just like any of these other monarchs. We have to take him down. We know that it was the king that was really standing up for us. He was the champion of the people. When you had these elders and these nobles, a lot of the time they would be just trying to make whatever they can out of the peasants. But the king would be the champion of the people. And we could go up to the gates of the palace and petition to speak to the king. And he had a direct connection to us. We were his subjects. You know, he looked after us. So once you take the king out of the way, who have we got that's looking after us? Who is our owner, as it were? And we've been taught to think that, well, we can be our owner. We can be our own owner. We can be free. We don't need a king to rule over us.
Yeah, sure. In a world of corporations, we can be free.
Yeah. Well, it's a false concept of freedom, isn't it, that they've sold us?
Yeah.
And that's what they talk about in this as well. And then they say the Jews have destroyed the faith in the church, which they have done. I get so amazed at people that think that they're being anti-Jewish by being anti-Christianity.
I know. And they even own up to it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the most Jewish thing anybody can do, is be anti-Christianity.
Well, the pagans miss all that altogether, don't they? This is why I get annoyed at pagans sometimes, because they blame everything on Christianity, but Christianity was the only thing that was holding everything together.
Well, besides that, it shows that they really haven't looked into Judaism very much. They haven't really looked at the Talmud. I mean, it's very central to the Talmud to be anti-Christian. You know, spit on the cross, curse the cross, curse the churches when you go past, curse the Christians in your prayers that you make every day. I mean, and this is besides all the insults that are in the Talmud that are aimed at Jesus and Mary and Noah and Abraham. And, I mean, all these, and Isaiah. I mean, all these famous people from the Old Testament, the Talmud just slanders them. But did you know in Israel, in the textbooks, they don't even have a multiplication sign, an addition sign. They won't even put the cross as an addition sign. They put a T sign instead. That's how much they hate the cross.
Yeah, I can believe it.
I mean, that's the establishment. That's the state that has done that. It's organized hatred of Christianity. And then you get people that think to be anti-Jewish means you've got to be anti-Christianity. It doesn't make sense.
To be honest, right, I mean, I've never really found anybody really explain World War One to me. And I didn't really know myself. Somebody asked me like a couple of months ago, and I couldn't really put my finger on it. But I realise now that this was the First Holy War. when they took down the Christian monarchs, and they, if you remember, they banned the Pope and had a huge Masonic celebration at Versailles. So it was actually the first Holy War, and the second was obviously the second, and I do believe there will be a third. And we only have to win one, thankfully, where they're going to win all three. So that's some future optimism.
Well, I think if we would turn back to God, then we would stand a chance of winning. And if you look,
well, I agree with that. I don't think communism would never have ever took a grip in Europe had we stuck to our original Christian feelings, opinions.
Well, it can't get a hold all the while you have a faith in God. And I could just bring up an example: the South Africans with the Battle of Blood River, when they were vastly outnumbered. Yep. By the Zulus, and they prayed to God and said, if we win this battle, just like the Israelites of old, if we win this battle, we will swear to serve you and we will be your people. And they won the battle, and the Zulus or the whatever Negro tribe it was, they said that they saw angels in the sky, and the angels were firing upon them, and there wasn't one South African harmed, and yet there was, hundreds or thousands of these Negroes that were,
fascinating story,
destroyed by this force from the clouds, and after that they were a Christian nation, and it wasn't until, they dropped apartheid and all the rest of it after the war that they really sort of fell apart after they went back on God's laws. So you got an example there, because it does say in the Bible, if you ask God for His help, then He will give it to us. But it's no good asking him for it if you're not going to humble yourself first. And this is what the Jews prey upon, this idea that we won't humble ourselves. We're a stiff-necked people. So they will say, you don't want to be serving God. You're far better than that. You're modern. This is backwards. This is backwards fairy tales and superstitions, and it's great fairies in the sky, and they will mock it and they will ridicule it.
While they're slowly infiltrating Europe.
Yeah, whilst also infiltrating the church. That was a big part of them actually destroying the church, was their infiltration of it. And also in the video, you've got a good piece on this, where this was exposed by somebody called Belladod, and he said that 1,100 communists had infiltrated the Catholic Church. Now, who was Belladod, and where was it that this was said, Dennis?
This was, she was a former, believe it, communist when she said this. She'd actually gone back into the faith again. I'd have personally strung her up myself, but this was in the House of Congress in 1953 when she was giving a testimony. And she said at the time in America that during the 30s, over 1,000 priests infiltrated, or so-called people hoping to be priests, infiltrated the Catholic Church. They weren't working to secure that. They were trying to secure infiltration and bring it down. And, like I said, she actually was welcomed back into the faith. But then again, I'm not really convinced that the Catholic Church was what it was before the infiltration. But, and this is openly admitted, but very rarely talked about.
And they subverted it from within. And this is why we're hearing now about all these pedophile priests. On the one hand,
they said this in communism by the back door, Sven. It was very rare before then. And they had this investigation by Australian media, and they found out that everything rose in the 60s with this paedophilia. And of course, Freemasonry has always been associated with paedophilia, but you never hear of any Freemasons actually being, caught in a lodge or anything like that. You only ever hear of a Catholic priest. And it's intentional.
I think we've got two forces at play here. We've got the infiltration into the church of these priests who were deliberately moving into the church to subvert it. The worst kind of people, homosexuals, pedophiles, and just giving themselves free rein, knowing that it would destroy the church's good name. And then on the other hand, you've also got all these Jews working in the media. So when they hear about it, they make sure it's front page news. They're not going to tell you about the rabbi that's abusing the children.
Exactly. I mean, it goes on in all scales of society, but it's only the Catholic Church, which people, it's been that brainwashed now that, for instance, in Ireland, when somebody thinks of a priest now in Ireland, he thinks of a paedophile.
And whenever it's the Catholic Church, they call it a paedophile. They will never say it's a homosexual in the Catholic Church.
I agree.
is the only place. Everywhere else, they, you know, they will say, oh, it's homosexuals, but in the Catholic Church, it's all pedophiles, because they don't want the public to know there's a link between homosexuality and pedophilia. And that's another important part.
Well, it was right for it. We know it is, you know.
Well, there was an instruction from a Jew years back to all the rest of the Jews. And I mean, this is recorded. This is documented. I forget what his actual position was. And that's what he advised them to do. He said, become Christians and infiltrate the church. And they did. They became conversos. And this guy's talking about this, or he's recording it, that this is being mentioned in the lodge. And he says, of course, some of the people that did infiltrate the church, they turned their back on the Jews and they became good conversos. They were the ones, the one that actually exposed the Talmud at the time of Martin Luther. There was one Jew. Yeah. Pfefferkorn, I think his name was, and he actually stood up against the other rabbis, and he was saying to the Pope, no, look, this Talmud is the most evil thing there is. You cannot let the Jews have this Talmud. And these other Jews were attacking him. So there was occasionally, you know, these good Jews, but at the same time, 99% of them were just loyal. Yeah, they were loyal to Jews, and they were in the church to take it down. And it's a something that's been going on for centuries. You think back when this happened, it was about the time of when the Muslims were in Spain Catherine of Aragon, or around about that time. And it's taken from then all the way up until now that they were infiltrating the church and trying to take it down from within, and bringing in a Kabbalistic influence, bringing in the Kabbalah, and trying to make out that this Jewish mysticism had anything to do with Christianity. And that's how come a lot of the Kabbalah got mixed in with it. You had Christians thinking that the Kabbalah was Christian and looking up to these rabbis as if they had special knowledge from God. And it was all brought about by this infiltration. I know Dr. E. Michael Jones, you know, he still seems to think that Jews can be converted, but I really think what history shows us is that, you know, they can't be converted. They just cannot be trusted. As soon as you let them into the church, they're going to destroy it. Even if one of them is genuine and does work for the good of the church, 99 of them are going to be against the church. And then because that, and because that one of them is good, people will then say, well, look at this good one. They're not all bad. We have to let them in. So in actual fact, even the good one is working to help the bad ones, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
It lulls people into a false sense of security. So they've destroyed the faith in the church, and this guy that's writing all this down, he talks about Masonry as well, and the fact that Masonry was also infiltrated by the Jews. And there's a really good point that he makes, that the Gentile Masons don't realize that they are actually building their own jails. And what he meant by that is building jails for their descendants, which is what we see now. We see our nationalists being jailed in prisons that were built by our own people on laws that were drafted and put forward before the parliament by Jews. These hate speech laws, Race Relations Act, all of this. This must have all been thought ahead by them.
I'm sure it was. It's been well planned.
I mean, they say that once they've got power, nobody will be able to speak ill against the Jews. And you know, that's what hate speech laws are.
Yeah, I think copyright laws are the same, you know, because I think Jews invented that in the music game, but it's used as a form of silencing as well. I noticed when I put this up, I didn't even put it publicly, and it's a copyright strike against it. I think there must be the Churchill's speech later on, I'm thinking anyway. But it's just another means of you know, stifling the voice.
The whole music thing with copyright is, you know, it's very strange when you think about it, because music, people used to think, how can anybody own music? You sing a song. We all used to sing when we were working in the fields. You look at the soldiers, they're marching, they're all singing a song. And who could ever think of owning a song? Yeah. And then suddenly you've got the Jews that moved into the music industry in America, and they started promoting what they wanted to be pop stars. And that's when this copyright idea came in, and owning a piece of music and owning a song. Henry Ford wrote about it. There's a couple of chapters in the International Jew that are actually dealing with that, which were quite an eye opener when I first heard them.
Yeah, it's an eye opener.
Well, he also talks about the Protestants, and he says that the Protestants are unaware of their loyalty to the Jews. Now, nowadays, it's the Catholics as well that are unaware.
That's right. Exactly.
Back then, it was the Protestants. And, you know, I reading that Holy Reich, in that, the author is trying to make the case that in Germany, the National Socialists were more supportive of the Protestants than they actually were of the Catholics. And they would put forward Martin Luther as being representative of the German spirit and representative of the nationalist spirit. When he was going against the Catholic Church, and also when he was going against the Jews. But then all the information that you've brought to the table seems to show, you know, a different side of it. It shows that actually there was a lot of support for Catholicism more so than Protestantism. You know, this seems to be what he's saying here, that the Protestants are more loyal to the Jews than the Catholics. And he brings up a couple of instances. Calvin, he says, is descended from a Jew. Is that right?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that before.
That's what the guy says. You know, he was descended from the Jews, and he also had Jewish finance behind him.
Well, this is the thing that a lot of people don't realise. There was a lot of Jewish finance involved in the Reformation, and all of it was on the side of the Protestants, paying for the Bibles to be translated and influencing the translations themselves. I mean, apparently there were thousands of mistakes that were made in that first translation into English.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just Catholics didn't want people to have a Bible. They didn't want there to be all these different translations of it, and they certainly didn't want Jews to be involved, or a large portion of the Catholic Church didn't want Jews to be involved, because we can't forget, as we're saying, there was this infiltration.
Yeah.
And Martin Luther, he was started up with funds from the Jews.
Yeah, that's another one.
So why would they be funding it if this was, you know, if this was a genuine Christian revolution? Why would the Jews be funding it?
Well, it's a bit like in the Ukraine, where a lot of nationalists from down in the Balkans, when they had a problem with Russia a couple of years ago, went to fight the Russians, and they were funded by Soros. And it's a weird situation, because you're actually being funded by your enemy. Same thing.
Well, the most bizarre thing is they talk about in the Ukraine, it's all neo-Nazis, and yet it's all Jews in government.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's America funding the neo-Nazis in the Ukraine. Yeah. They're just pawns.
A weird world, yeah.
Well, getting back to this, he also starts talking about how the Pope is just like the other monarchs on earth, and he's standing in the way of the Jews taking power. But I did notice that they do refer to this Jewish hero as the King of Israel, when it's really the Antichrist. I mean, Christ is the King of Israel. But then later on, he does actually come out with a much better term for this Antichrist figure of the Jews, and he calls him the King of the World. And I thought that, well, that's accurate, because the devil says in the New Testament, doesn't he, that he is the one responsible for making all the kings, and he could make Jesus into a king and give him all these kingdoms, and that's down to the devil. So I think that's quite accurate there. But it brings in all this mystical side to it, that once the Jews have their place, or once the Jews are in Palestine, then they'll rebuild their temple, and then their Jewish Messiah will come, and he will kill all the Gentiles or turn them all into slaves, and the Jews will be kings. And it's a similar thing with Muslims. They say that when Jesus comes back, he's going to attack all the Christians for saying that he was the Son of God, and he's going to kill all the pigs, something bizarre like that. And everyone will either become Muslim or they'll all be slaves. There's all this, everyone else is going to be slaves. And you don't have that with Christianity.
It's weird, isn't it? And yet we get blamed for all the slavery.
And they basically, then they just brought disgrace upon the church with all these pedophile scandals. And along with that, they influenced the church. They said that they were going to influence the church so that it basically became a cheerleader for Jewish causes. And you think been written in 36?
It managed to fit in of priests, you know, just in stupid outfits. I mean, you know, WWF wrestling outfits, giving mass, you know, it's just like, it really is ridiculous, but they've done it. It's how it is now.
Well, this happens in the Protestant churches as well, doesn't it? All the happy clappy churches and
same thing.
Whatever you think of that is sacrilegious, they will be doing in a church and thinking that they're serving God by doing it. Bizarre stuff, rattlesnake handling and speaking in tongues and dancing about and not really showing any respect
for their creator. That's a key word, lots of respect.
It's all about modernization. The clergy are now even promoting homosexuality. Did you know that? The Vatican and the, I think it's the Young Catholics, they've included the phrase LGBTQ in one of their recent young people's encyclicals that get sent out amongst everyone. And the people responsible for it said, oh yes, it was the young people themselves. They wanted to include that. And when it was investigated, it wasn't the young people at all. It was the people that were holding this camp and they put it in there trying to push homosexuality.
It shouldn't really surprise me because, like I said, it's no longer the Catholic Church does not exist at this time in history. It is the Church of Satan. So it shouldn't really surprise me.
Well, if you think this was written in 80 years ago, this was written and it is outlining all the things that have taken place in the last 80 years. When you think they're going to start promoting Jewish causes, we think about international banking and the way that the church promotes that. There's its own Vatican Bank. Refugees. Look at the Pope who's saying, you know, we need to have open borders. Yeah. Everyone needs to be letting in refugees.
End his life if they could get hold of him.
UN human rights. So they promote that. And this isn't just the Catholic Church. I've seen the Archbishop of the Church of England, and I've seen him give speeches where he's been talking about different charters from the UN, United Nations Human Rights Charter, and different sections of that. Hasn't been reading bits of the Bible, been reading bits of the Human Rights Charter. I mean, I question that before I was even a nationalist, and I was thinking, why is he not using the Bible? Yeah. What does the UN have to do with an archbishop, you know, talking to a conference? They're encouraging interbreeding. They seem to think that's great. There's no telling people that they shouldn't be marrying people from other cultures. They're quite happy to marry people from other races.
I can't stress enough the silence from the Vatican over the Irish abortion issue. I don't think anybody actually came out and said don't vote, you know, against life.
That's a good point. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, the Pope's not really saying anything about abortion anymore, is he?
Which means he's saying nothing, isn't it? You know, he doesn't care. That's the image they're giving off, and they don't care because they're not real Catholics.
Well, he said, who am I to judge, didn't he, a while back? Who am I to judge?
Well, it's his job to judge, not so much the person, but the actual ideology or the actions. He's supposed to judge them. He's there for.
I think he's really the culmination of all of this, isn't he, Francis?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got rid of the other one, the last Pope, because he was a bit, he wasn't moving quick enough, and a bit doddery, and you know, he had the Hitler Youth behind him, which never helped him. And so they brought this vibrant Argentinian in, and he's picked up the baton where, you know, second thought.
And you can imagine, like, more and more Masons have infiltrated, and the direction of the church has got more and more progressive, and then finally, in 2000 whatever, they finally get a communist, Marxist, leftist Pope at the top.
Well, I think they had one before then. I think the guy from Poland, he actually was Jewish, John Paul. I mean, he did things worse than any Pope. He had, you know, Red Indians, and he had, you know, Hindus, and everybody were in the Vatican, giving mass. Just complete heretic.
Well, that comes up after Vatican II. I'm not too aware of these recent popes. I was thinking then of the last one. He used to be in the Hitler Youth, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is that the one you're saying was Jewish?
I either loved him. No, it was the one before him from Poland. He actually looked what you could imagine the perfect pope to be. He actually, in his youth, you know, before he obviously got a bit jittery and losing his senses, he actually looked the ideal pope. If you had a vision in your head, that would be the ideal pope. In fact, he was actually more the Antichrist than the pope.
Yeah, looks can deceive, don't they?
They
explain.
Guys being burned with women.
They explain in this that Jews started all revolutions, even the ones that then turn against them. And I'm wondering just how many Jews are involved in nationalism at the moment.
I think there's quite a few. I think you look at the alternate right, I think all the leaderships, they're all Jews, admittedly.
There's a lot of, people that say that they're half Jewish, or they say that they forgot what they actually said, or they didn't really mean it, and then they turn out to be subversive people. They're promoting a subversive message. You've got the alt-right in Israel. Apparently there's an alt-right in Israel as well. I do wonder. And there was a guy in the National Front who actually said that he was homosexual and Jewish recently.
Yep.
Of all people.
All comes out eventually. If I said a bit of a banter with somebody on YouTube in a comment not long back, and he said he was, in America on the right and all this, but he said he disregards Hitler as meaningful today. Well, there's your first mistake, pal.
Well, they'll always drop a little bit of poison in there. I mean, just as I was mentioning earlier, when the language that they're using, and they're calling this Jewish Messiah, they're calling him Older King of Israel. So what that is saying is, even though this is exposing Jewry and it's exposing Jewish plans, so you start to believe it, and then they'll drop something like that in, which legitimizes the Jews' claim to be in Israel when they're not. The church is Israel. Christians are Israel. I would say that only white Christians or white people are Israel. But, just the mainstream church says that only Christians are Israel, and the Jews have just hijacked the word.
So well, they've hijacked everything, haven't they? Anti-Semites and you name it, you know what I mean?
Well, it's like, what's his name? Brother Nathaniel. Kapner. And he drops lots of poison in there. He believes in the Holocaust, doesn't he? And he's anti-Adolf Hitler, and yet a lot of people will think, well, he's a great, he's a real truth teller. And Henry Mackow, he supports the Holocaust about Hitler.
I'm not sure about Brother Nathaniel. I don't really know that much. Every time I hear him, he's having a go at Israel. But I can't say for sure,
Well, they'll always drop in a little bit of poison alongside of it. And again, one of the main things that they actually succeeded in doing, in selling to us, was selling us this false definition of freedom. Freedom to indulge all your passions. Well, that's not real freedom. Real freedom is freedom to serve God and obey God's law. And we're not allowed to serve God's law. We're not allowed to speak our minds. We're not allowed to hang murderers. We're not allowed to hang paedophiles. We're not allowed to hang sodomites.
We can kill babies.
Yeah, you can kill babies. You can murder babies in the womb. Do you see what I mean? We're not free to serve God.
I looked into this the other week where someone was asking the question, when do you define life as such? And talking to a feminist, said, would you say the heartbeat? And she's shaking her head. No.
Apparently, I think it's from the 40th day, the soul enters. Soul enters through the pineal gland. I think that's when you first get the actual gland that grows into the pineal gland, and they think that that is some connection with it. And I think there's people that say, well, it's on about the 40th day. That's when it's a living soul basically that's been carried within the mother, and it's definitely against God's law to do that.
Cutting open the woman, dragging the baby out and smashing it over head with a hammer. If they show that on film to what they're actually doing on the inside, there's no different.
Well, they talk about it as if it's just a minor medical procedure. Yeah, and you think it's doctors that are doing this? Doctors? Yeah. How can this be liberation for the woman? Female liberation. Well, this is supposed to be a big win for feminists.
Is that T-shirt? When a woman wears a T-shirt saying, I've had an abortion.
As if they're proud of it.
Glorifying it.
Yeah, but they say that this is, what is it, women's rights? Reproductive rights?
Yeah, it's my body.
Yeah, no, it's not your body if it's got a child in it. You're caring for that child and your body. Their body isn't theirs to just give away to who they want to give it away to. They're not supposed to, if they give away their body to a member of another race, they are giving something away that is not theirs to give. They are giving away all their ancestors' heritage that was passed on to them, and they're supposed to be the trustee of it. They're supposed to then pass that on to their descendants. They're just throwing it away. They've denied their ancestors.
Throwing away that rock solid tradition, safe family oak tree that the Jews have to knock down to infiltrate.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's a whole oak tree, and they're just killing it. Killing it off. It's never going to grow. It's never going to grow another branch if they decide to give their body away to someone from another race, and yet they think it's theirs to do. And again, this is all because of this Jewish idea of what freedom is. They've totally subverted reality. Well, moving on to the next bit, he then starts talking about the other countries, and he says France has a Freemasonic government. Which is probably the most Masonic, isn't it? If you look at the catchphrase of the French Revolution, that's blatant, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they banned Christianity for 10 years, I believe. You know, that's certainly all the symbols, down a French front there, all the buildings, they're all geared for these ley lines that go across the world. You know, it is basically a Masonic country where, even when Croatia played in the final, I knew Croatia had a problem because they were nationalist and Catholic.
Well, they say, while France has a Freemasonic government, England is the centre of the Jewish banking system and usury and the promoter of Protestantism. So, England is still under the heel of the Freemasons, but probably not quite so much as France.
Again,
what we have the problem here is with finance. France is secular, isn't it? And it's very atheistic, and they try and keep religion out of things. Whereas in England, you have the Church of England, even though it's a front and it's not really a church. It still has the structure, appearance of religion.
The illusion.
Yeah, the illusion of religion having anything to do with it. But that's because we promote Protestantism. That's why they have that illusion. That's why England has that. That's why England is allowed to have that, because it then promotes Protestantism and helps Protestants undermine the countries that were Catholic years ago, I would suggest.
The laws that Catholics can't be certain things.
I think E. Michael Jones in his book said that Britain had a lot to do with the French Revolution, and the Masons from Britain were sent out to these other countries to subvert them and pull down the Catholic Church.
Oh, he's 100% right there.
It actually began in England. I know the Germans, the National Socialists, were trying to say that Freemasonry started out and it was a Gentile endeavour, and then it got subverted by the Jews. But I think it's been a Jewish scam right from the beginning.
Well, I do, actually. But I think so we're talking about the Catholic Church as well. They felt that, it wasn't anti-Christian in its beginning, but I'm like you, really, in that corner.
Well, building Solomon's temple and resurrecting people and all these Egyptian gods and all these Gnostic ideas and symbolism, it's just been Jewish since the very start. And even if they say, it goes back to the Templars, where did the Templars pick it up from? Well, they picked it up from the Middle East, from Jews and Muslims that were in Jerusalem and around that area and their magic. And then going on from that, you get to Masonry. And, we've done programs before talking about Herod and Herod's influence on it.
Yeah.
You don't get more Jewish than Herod. I would say.
Well, it's surprising to me. It's not surprising. It's people are surprised, I think. So what we've been saying now for a couple of years is all coming to pass, and they can't really understand it. Because when people in this country can't speak as freely as they once could, and you know, when we were saying communism is going to come, this is it. This is the beginning now.
Well, you'd never have believed it 10 years ago. You'd say that people would be locked up for criticising the government, locked up for wrong things. Yep. There would be a thing called hate crimes that didn't actually involve any violence. It was just something that somebody said, or if you said that journalists would be turned away. From even entering the country, two journalists would be turned away. Incredible. Another journalist would be locked up on the false charges and starved and tortured in prison. You know, you would just say you're absolutely mad. That wouldn't happen in Britain.
Yeah. Just 10 years ago. Happening. And the problem with what's going on is that we know the extent of what they can go to, because you just look at the French and the Russian revolutions, and the same people are in power. So, you know, don't think for a minute they can't even turn a screw more.
Well, I do find it hopeful that some of the civic nationalist groups and spokesmen, I mean, people like UKIP, Gerard Batten, even Jordan Peterson, and you know, people like Stefan Molyneux, they are drawing attention to what the communists did and the fact that they killed millions of people. And they're saying, well, why is it that you only ever hear about the Nazis? Why do we never hear about the communists who killed hundreds of times more people than the Nazis did? And you actually hear these civic nationalists and these alt-right people saying that now, which I think that's pretty positive.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it works in that way. You know, it's just I don't know how loyal these people are.
Well, they're not National Socialists. I mean, they're not saying, well, Adolf Hitler was right. What they're questioning is why are children only taught about Adolf Hitler? Why are they not taught about communism? Why is the worst things in the world always Adolf Hitler when communism was so much better, so much worse? I mean, they're not saying that Adolf Hitler is good. They're saying that communism was far worse.
But it's Stefan Molyneux that, you know, ill-educated, that he doesn't really know what's going on. You know, I fail to see where he can't see what's going on. I mean, he did a radio podcast where somebody phoned him in and said, talked about how the greatest story had affected him, and he'd obviously never seen it, so he was asking about it. And the crunch of the old talk was that facts don't really matter. That's what Stefan Molyneux was saying. Facts don't matter, because this guy was quoting the facts from the documentary. Well, undeniable facts.
I think the problem with Stefan Molyneux is that he's part Jewish. That would explain it.
Well, there's a surprise.
Yeah, it's just, that's just the way it is. So he's not going to get it. Jordan Peterson, I think he knows what side his bread is buttered. He knows if he starts going into this, then he'll be deplatformed.
He won't cross that line.
He's the only guy that, you know, that they will allow online at the moment. I mean, Alex Jones has been banned, and they would never have him on British TV. But Jordan Peterson, he was interviewed on the late night news channel a while back, half hour interview. He's been on Channel 4. They will allow him on.
And allow is the word, because obviously you don't get on there. You won't find me on there, will you?
Well, definitely, no, you won't. But I mean, Alex Jones is just on there for criticising Islam, let alone the Jews. Peterson knows if he...
Well, I'm on, we know we're free.
Yeah. Well, you've been on cable TV once, won't you? You're on cable TV.
Well, yeah, but that's not quite the same, is it?
No, not quite the same. But at least you can say, as seen on TV.
Once
on cable TV in America somewhere.
That's right.
Well, the only thing left, basically, what they're saying is they've also got Spain and Mexico. That's in the Jews' hands. America is controlled by them. The world's press is controlled by them. The only thing left that's not controlled by the Jews is the Catholic Church. And this was in 1936. Yeah. So they were saying, what we have to do is we have to teach the Gentiles to despise their families. We have to teach them to despise patriotism. We have to get them to see the church as being false. And of course, then you get all this criticism of the church and saying, oh, none of it's all true. It was all made up. It's Jewish. It was all written by the Jews. And that it was written by the Jews. You know, that's tailor-made. to give to nationalists to turn them against Christianity.
Jesus is a Jew and all the other stuff.
You know, they couldn't think of a better way to turn nationalists against Christianity than to Judaize it.
To Jewify it, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the earliest heresies, was Judaizing, and that was turning Christianity Jewish.
Yeah, I dare say.
Introducing Jewish interpretations to Christian teachings is Judaizing, and it was mentioned in the New Testament. That's how old it was. This idea of trying to subvert the church and subvert Christianity into promoting Jewish ideas. And this is what's happened to the Catholic Church.
Exactly.
This is what they did by
subverting. 2,000 years, but done it.
Well, then you get to the point where you've gone into all of this, and this guy's exposed all of this, where he's been at this lodge meeting. And this was all written in 1936. And of course, then you have the rise of Adolf Hitler, and then you have the war, the Great Holy War that you call it. And then it was after the Great Holy War that the final bits of the subversion of the Roman Catholic Church began. But first, there was one last defiant act, and there were $254 million were funneled to Argentina and Spain for the National Socialists to retire on. 350 million francs were taken out of Yugoslavia for the Ustasha to retire on. And this was all done by the Vatican.
Yes.
Alongside the, what they called the rat lines as well, wasn't it? They spirited them out.
Yeah, well, I think this guy called them the pipeline, but yeah, the rat lines is, which was, again, something they didn't really need to do, but felt that they had to, to support the people who had helped to escape.
I mean, that's a lot of money, isn't it?
Nobody can tell me that the Vatican weren't involved, with the National Socialists.
Well, it can't. How much money is that there? 600 million?
300 million, what is it?
Yeah, it's $254 million, 350 million francs. I mean, back then, 7 years ago.
That's a lot of money.
Hell of a lot of money. And that they didn't have to do.
That's right.
They didn't have to do that.
Well, I believe there was he's talking about the Ustasha there. That's the Croatian division that got out of Europe. I think there was 30,000 Croatians made it to Argentina, where they call the place Little Croatia.
Well, that was their reward for being so Catholic, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. For fighting on their behalf, yeah.
They were a massively Catholic country.
Yeah.
Thought of very highly by the Vatican for their loyalty to Catholicism. And the Vatican paid them back.
And they even kept the leader in the Vatican while the Allies were hunting for him, Pavlich. It was actually in the Vatican. So it says it all really. I mean, somebody said in another comment last week said that he was a communist, but biased. Well, I find that hard to believe.
Well, you would have thought that if he was a communist, he would have turned Pavlovich
exactly.
over, not actually hidden him in the Vatican. But this information about all this money that was being funneled to the National Socialists, that came out in 1996. How did that come about, Dennis?
Well, it's just a document that was finally released to show what happened. Obviously, I don't know how I found that one. I don't know how I found a lot of things, to be honest, but it's by going down this same path that I've always gone down, which nobody else bothers going down because they believe, that Hitler wasn't a Christian and all this kind of care. But the more you go down the path, the more you find.
Well, you see, I'm wondering whether it was the church that released that, because I doubt it, because they probably would have rather, the general public didn't know that they were helping the National Socialists. So somebody with access to the church files that then brought that out. So again, that's somebody trying to hurt the church, isn't it? Revealing that.
Quite possible, yeah. I mean, by that time, I think around about that time, there was a banker, I think, in is it the Godfather, something like that. A banker was hung, a priest or something, had to go to London.
Masonic.
Masonic the bridge, didn't he?
Yeah, Masonic killing. Could have been tied in with that. Then you say of the 1 billion Catholics around the world, the vast majority are completely unaware of what has taken place. And it's not just the Catholics. As you say, there are a lot of nationalists that are unaware of this. And they just, you know, they just think, oh, Christianity is Jewish. They just believe what they've been told, what they've been taught. Because it's the church telling them this a lot of the time. Even the Pope saying that the Jews have a previous dispensation from God. Jews don't need to be converted because they have a previous dispensation from God. And that was part of, that's what the Pope said recently. I don't think they should be converted anyway. But what that is saying is, well, Jews are better than Christians. They're more important. They don't have to.
Well, mostly surprises me what this Pope says, because he is what he is, you know.
Well, this is.
It should surprise other people, but a billion of them actually believe this guy.
Well, this has come about because of Vatican II. But there is resistance. There's the Society of St. Pius X, which is resistance to Vatican II, basically. That's who Bishop Richard Williamson was a member of.
Well, this guy came up with a good point. I was reading it on a website. He said something like that the suburbing of the Catholic Church can't really happen. All they can do is infiltrate the buildings. But as long as the Catholic, you know, doctrines are kept in the original forms by how many Catholics there are, it can only decrease or increase, but can't be totally subverted. Only the buildings.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Obviously, the teachings can't be subverted, or well, they can try, and they have succeeded with changing some words and politically correcting it in the Bible. But it's the interpretations that they subvert, and that's the issue, because the Pope gives out the interpretations, and what he says, that's supposed to be the final interpretation. And it's the Pope and the Vatican II that change the interpretations of what was written.
The Protestants, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, and the Protestants are just as bad.
Yeah. In fact, I think they more or less turned it into the Protestant Church, haven't they, really?
Well, ecumenical, isn't it? They've said that all roads lead to God and none are better than any others. So, Muslims and Jews, they're our brothers in the faith. This idea that Muslims and Jews can be compared to Christians in any way or are descended from Abraham in any way altogether, that's just sickening to think that anybody would even think that. Would entertain that thought. That would have been seen as, heretical 100 years ago, probably less than that. People have said, what the hell are you on about? Jews and Muslims worshipping the same God as Christians? They don't worship Christ. They think Christ is in a bowl of excrement, boiling in a bowl of excrement in hell. They don't worship the same God as the Christians, the Jews.
Well, you know, the fork tongue of all fork tongues, Churchill, was a nice way to finish on it, because he once said that this was a war to save Christianity. but we know what he is.
Yeah, well, you finish up with a Churchill quote. Do you want me to give the Churchill quote here?
Well, yeah, I finish up with a quote as well from a book or something, isn't it? Well, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, you've got another little bit here. You've got about how Pope Pius XII, he was allowed to continue, but then he was believed to have been poisoned in 1958. And it says, after the Pope's death, there was an awful stench from the corpse and his face became terribly discoloured. And these are the classic symptoms of the cup of Borgia, poison perfected by the Borgia family. If you look up the Borgia family, I mean, probably our listeners have probably heard of them before. They became prominent in ecclesiastical and political affairs in the 15th and 16th centuries, producing two popes, Alphonse de Borgia, who ruled as Pope Calixtus III during 1455-1458, and Rodrigo Lanzol Borgia as Pope Alexander VI during 1492-1503. Especially during the reign of Alexander VI, they were suspected of many crimes, including adultery, incest, simony, theft, bribery, and murder, especially murder by arsenic poisoning. Because of their grasping for power, they made enemies of the Medici, the Sforza, and the Dominican friar Savonarola, among others. They were also patrons of the arts who contributed to the Renaissance. So, of course, that's why the Renaissance is full of all these naked pictures in the church, because it was these guys that were promoting it, that were funding it. So there's your poison. So there's a link going from the bourgeois right up until this poisoning of the Pope in the 20th century, killed by the same method. you know, that tends to show that it's you know, that there's a conspiracy at work in the church that's been working towards all of this all that time.
It's totally blatant.
And then, of course, then we get Vatican II, where they made all these changes. Jews no longer guilty of killing Christ. Anti-Semitism, sinners are sin. Jews having a previous dispensation from God. Many paths to God instead of one, and Jews and Muslims being brothers in the faith. And that's how we get up to today. And then you've got a speech from Winston Churchill where he says, "This way alone can the skeleton structure of a world government be clothed with the flesh and blood of a living organism." And he's talking about the New World Order and the EU and the United Nations, I believe. Is that right?
Well, he mentions that it was on his suggestion that the EU has been formed, and he says, so already taken advantage in America. So consequently, it's an admittance that he knew all along about the New World Order. And when he said it was a war to save Christianity, he was lying.
It was a war to destroy Christianity and bring communism in by the back door.
We've
definitely by the back door if it's involving these sodomy popes, as we've talked about before. Right, Dennis.
I'm sure.
We've finished. So thank you very much for coming on today. Yeah. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan.